That's how I'm giving Shira. Don't worry about it. I think you have enough of it in one day, no? No, I want to already move on to Pesach. Normally I would have waited till 30 days before Pesach, but since you guys are not going to be here, I would like today to speak about Chametz. Hell, are you trying to turn on the heater?
Yeah.
Oh.
Did it work?
No, I'm aware of the
Okay. So today we're going to talk about chametz. I'm going to try to focus more on the practical. In other words, understanding chametz and through understanding chametz, understand exactly what has to be done before Pesach. Okay, first, as you all learned in first grade, at least I learned in first grade in the school that I went to, that the definition of chametz is flour plus water plus 18 minutes. The flour could be made on one of the five types of wheat, and that's chametz. Now, there are three different areas that, or halachos, that it's relevant to. There's an Isur Achila, there's an Isur Hanah, in other words, you're not allowed to derive benefit from Chametz on Pesach, and there's another law of Bal Yiro'eh, Bal Yimatzeh, where you can't own Chametz on Pesach. The Isur Achila pertains to all kinds of different levels of mixtures. An example, if you eat a kazayit on Pesach, it's an Isur Karet. If you eat a half a kazayit, so it's not a korate, it's chatzi shir, but chatzi shir is also in the Torah, so it's a lav. But once it goes down to lower levels of tarovet, of mixtures, when it gets to a point where it's no longer a kazayit toch kadei achilat pras, which is, according to most Rishonim, a mixture of 1 to 6, it drops below an Issur D'oraisa and becomes like an Issur D'rabbanan. I'm not going to focus on each one of these different levels. I'd like to focus on the din of bittul b'shishim. Normally, in most halachot in the Torah, once you have 60 times the Issur, 60 times of heter against one part of Issur, so it becomes completely batel. That's on the when you're talking about a wet mixture, and then you have no taste and no appearance of the Isser at all. In other words, for all practical purposes, it's annihilated or assimilated by the amount of heter that there is. And as I said, on the Diraita level, once there's no time whatsoever, it becomes completely mutter. Chazal, however, made a gezeira that when it comes to chametz on Pesach, we're makbid afilu chad be'elef, even 1 out of 1,000, which doesn't literally mean 1 out of 1,000, it could even mean more than that. Even the smallest particle of chametz that falls into a pot on Pesach makes it osur. The difference is, there's a difference between if this little crumb of chametz falls before Pesach into the pot of soup, or it falls on Pesach into the pot of soup. If it falls before Pesach, so then we basically say it's mutter, it's bittel. And that's really what matzah bakers, be they hand matzah bakers or machine matzah bakers, very much rely on this halacha that you have a bittul achad b'shishim, because to assume that there's not going to be even the tiniest amount of chametz stuck to a rolling pin or to somebody's fingernail or to the machinery or whatever is highly unlikely. So we rely on that concept of bittul b'shishim because that's really the only way to do it. When I was a youngster, they didn't have a proper kosher lePesach hashkach on milk. So what my father used to do is he used to buy milk before Pesach and freeze it, assuming that even if there was trace amounts of chametz in the milk, it would be batel b'shishim, and it'd be no problem. Had we purchased milk on Pesach, the chash was that maybe the milk was produced on Pesach, or maybe chametz fell into the milk on Pesach, and that would be problematic. Nowadays, there are a lot of, I imagine, milk, you know, that you buy in various communities has a full hashkacha. Like here in Israel, as an example, they clean out the barns like months before Pesach and make it kosher Pesach long time before Pesach, so there couldn't be any chash whatsoever of any type of chametz stick feed getting into the milk. Again, way back when there weren't proper hashkachot, people used to use this concept of vitul b'shishin for other products on Pesach, meaning things that they basically assumed shouldn't be a problem, and you know, they would rely on the concept of vitul b'shishin. Nowadays, most communities do not rely on that. They actually look for a hashkacha that they know is good, that says on the kosher l'Pesach, so they know beyond a shadow of a doubt that it has supervision and there's no chash of chametz whatsoever. Okay, now when putting stuff away for Pesach before, when preparing your rooms before Pesach, it's important to understand this rule. In other words, if you own a can of, let's say, cans of tuna fish, which is a common thing, or packets of hot cocoa mix, which is a very common thing. So even if it's not kosher l'Pesach, you don't have to get rid of those things. All you have to do is just put it away. You don't have to sell it. You just put it away and don't use it for Pesach. Because even if there would be some chametz in there, it's batel b'shishim. Now I'm talking about normal tuna fish, not tuna fish that says on it starch or wheat starch or has, you know, wheat listed in the ingredients. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about products that don't say kosher l'Pesach on it, but there's no, shouldn't be any chametz in it. Peanut butter is something that you could sometimes find. Sometimes you have peanut butter that has starch in it, and that's problematic. But normal high quality peanut butter, you just check that there are no crumbs, you know, that you could see in there, and just put it away. You don't have to throw it out. You don't have to get rid of it. Oatmeal, granola bars, those things are chametz gomor, and you have to get rid of them before Pesach. Yes.
Something that's not really chametz,
same thing. You just put them away.
But anyway, so my question is, since we're not going to be any sheep during Pesach, do you have to put it away? Do you just leave it where it is?
You can leave it where it is, yeah. If you're not going to be going, if you're not going to be around that area, you don't have to. Just be put out of reach.
If you have other dorm people in the same dorm as you, you have to put it away.
If people are going to be there for Pesach?
Yeah.
Yes, you have to put it away.
So,
okay. Yes.
If it's mutl chatzkila, why do we even put it away?
I didn't say it's mutl chatzkila. I said that you could assume you could assume that most probably, even if there would be something, you know, chametz in there, that it would probably be batel b'shishim. But we're not so much. In other words, nowadays, you know, if you buy an apple, you know there's no chametz in it. Okay, but if you buy, you know, any of these type of products, you can't be 100% sure that there's nothing. Things are very, very complicated.
So it's not precisely usher, but it can be.
And therefore you don't eat it. Unless you know that for sure that there's no chametz. Yes, E.P.
With the peanut butter tin, it's like half empty. Is it a tin in the actual, how big the tin is, independent of how big the bread piece is in it, or is it dependent on how much peanut butter there is there?
Even if you had a slight amount of crumbs in the peanut butter, first of all, you look and try to take out any crumbs. If you see crumbs and you know, you can't get it out, then I would say that's problematic. But even if there would be, you're going to be mevatel your chametz when you, let's say, you know, after you do your bedikah at night, you do bitul chametz, you say kol chamir v'chamir, you mevatel chametz, includes chametz like that. You mevatel it, you don't have to worry about it. You're not going to be over in Israel of chametz shalav al Pesach. Okay, yeah.
In some foods you have 8 e-numbers, so does that make an issue with comments?
Again, I don't think that if you could read ingredients, and if you don't see any starch or any type of thing listed, that's not a problem. I don't think you have to worry about e-numbers on a level of Bali Rabbi Matzah. I wouldn't consume any food that, you know, wasn't checked up and doesn't have hashkacha because you have all those E numbers and you don't exactly know where it came from. Okay? Okay. Yes? Loud.
What about cosmetics?
I'll get the cosmetics. Yes?
What
are E numbers? E numbers meaning that they have different chemicals and you don't even know where the chemicals exactly come from. And they're like lists of the ways of, you know, bite, because of E-132. So it's an international number that you look up and you find out what kind of chemical that is. All right. If you have personally have things in your room, you can ask me after Shir if I don't relate to it directly, and I'll give you, try to give you an answer. Another very important halacha to know is the halacha of chametz nukshe. Chametz nukshe, the simple definition of chametz nukshe is chametz, meaning it has, let's say, flour, but the process of chimutz, the process of fermentation, is not complete, and it was never meant for normal human ingestion. The prime example of that would be, let's say, glue. In the good old days, they used to mix flour and water. They mix it really, really well, and they used to make glue out of it. And they would use this glue as an example to bind svarim. So, if it would be chametz, every Erev Pesach you have to burn all your svarim. Right? It would be very, very costly. But luckily, the halacha is that that's called chametz nuksha, meaning it's not really fully fermented. It was never really meant for human consumption. And that's the din of chametz nuksha. The halacha chametz nuksha is that there's no isur of bal yirah by a matzeh involved in it. You're not allowed to eat it. It's an isur achilu midrabanan. You're not allowed to eat chametz nuksha on Pesach. An interesting machlokas we've shown him is whether egg matzah is considered chametz nuksha. Shalom. Whether egg matzah is considered chametz nuksha. Strike one. According to most Rishonim, if you add egg, you mix it, eggs and flour, it can't become chametz, or it doesn't become chametz. If you mix flour, let's say, and apple juice, so according to many Rishonim, it doesn't become chametz. However, Rashi holds opposite, that not only can it become chametz, perhaps it becomes chametz even faster, and then at best it's chametz nuksha. Okay, I remember as a young lad reading the box of the side of the box of the Horowitz and Margaretten matzahs, the egg matzahs, and on the side of the matzah, of course it said Kashel Pesach on it, but on the side it said, you know, L'din achilat egg matzah the Pesach ayin ramah or achayin, but they gave it, like, instead of giving like ingredients, they gave it like marmakomos on the side of the box, and it looked a little bit like a Surgeon General's warning about, you know, on cigarettes, but it didn't say exactly what the issue was, and you had to like open up your own Shulchan Aruch and get to the Ramah and see that the Ramah says that the Minig Ashkenaz is not to eat egg matzahs on Pesach, and that's it. There's no machlokas on it. That is the Minig Ashkenaz. There's a machlokas Rishonim, and most Rishonim don't agree with Rashi, but the Ramah says the Minig Ashkenaz is to be no egg like Rashi. And therefore, we don't eat egg matzahs on Pesach at all, even if they're dipped in chocolate. Okay? We don't eat egg matzahs. However, old people and sick people, they are not capable of eating anything else, and they need it for their sustenance, so it's mutter for them, according to the Minig Ashkenaz, to consume egg matzahs on Pesach.
Not this year with fruit juices,
Same thing. No matter what it is, if it's not water and flour straight, if it's something else mixed in there, Minig Ashkenaz is not to eat it. Yes.
You can't eat it on Erev Pesach.
That's also a little bit of a machloket. I'll get into it some other time about Erev Pesach. Okay. Another category of chametz is chametz that's nifsal me'achilat kelev. Until now, we spoke about chametz nukshe, which kind of was edible, but it wasn't really meant for human consumption. What if you had a delicious piece of, I don't know, pizza that's clearly chametz, right? Starts off as chametz, but then it stays underneath your bed in your dorm for, let's say, 2-3 weeks until it's like green and extremely smelly, so much so that if a dog would come in, even the dog would no longer eat this slice of pizza.
What's it called?
Okay, that's called nifsal, from the word pasul, nifsal ma'achilat kelev. If it's reached the point that even a dog would not consider it food, it loses its status of food and therefore loses its issur completely. And then it would be mutter for you to munch on it on Pesach.
Yay!
Okay? This is relevant. Even I know no one's going to be eating munch on that pizza, but it's relevant. As an example. Oh, by the way, the Chazon Ish points out that something is dehydrated, even if a kelev wouldn't eat it in its dehydrated state, it's not considered nifsal mechad kelev because, you know, you just ate a little bit of water and then it's some kind of yummy food. So I'm not talking about something that's dehydrated. I'm talking about something that went through whatever other process and it's just, you know, it's basically, you know, irreversibly icky. An interesting machloka comes up, which is very applicable to us, and that's the din of denatured alcohol. Alcohol, internationally, is a controlled substance. Controlled because governments discovered that it's a very good area to tax. To put tax on alcohol in order to, you know, to tax people who drink alcohol. And they put, you know, that's why you have tax on all these type of, different things. However, what if alcohol was needed to be used for medical reasons or cosmetic reasons? So in order to alleviate the issue of tax, they came up with an incredible invention called denaturing. To denature, in short, is basically to take icky stuff and pour it into the yummy alcohol. And now the alcohol tastes extremely icky. Okay, it's like this poisonous icky flavor, whatever puts the stuff they pour in. They pour it in now. Now you could use it as alcohol, you just can't drink it because it's so bad. That's denatured alcohol. So the question is a machokas, the question is, does denatured alcohol have a din of nifsal mechlad kelev? On the one hand, let's say a kelev wouldn't drink it or eat it. On the other hand, essentially the alcohol is chametz. All the problem is that it's mixed with icky stuff and you can't separate the icky stuff from the yummy stuff. Does that have a din of chametz, or you say the whole thing is nifsal mechlad kelev? Similarly, if you had a slice of bread and you poured gasoline on it, okay? Do I say that this bread is now not chametz? Or do I say, no, it's not nifsal mechad kelev, it's just that I have a hard time squeezing the alcohol out of the bread. Okay? That's an issue. But Moshe Feinstein felt, in the Iker HaDin, that once it has denatured icky stuff into it, it's no longer considered chametz. Except he writes that he saw how Russian soldiers, when they would get their hands on perfume or cologne, after enough days or weeks or hours of not having enough alcohol to drink, they would drink cologne and they would drink perfume in order to be able to get the alcohol, even though it was denatured. And therefore, Moshe Feinstein was left with a type of a suffix, what to do about that. And because of that suffix, he paskin that any alcohol that was denatured and is still in liquid form, he feels a person should be machmir and get rid of it before Pesach. But anything like a cream or a spray that comes out dry or let's say a soap or a shampoo that's not of the viscosity of water, he feels you don't have to be machmir. So if you have an example, beer and wheat germ shampoo made out of real beer and wheat germ, you're allowed to use it on Pesach according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, because it doesn't have the viscosity of water, it's nifsal mechilat kelev, it doesn't have a din of food, and therefore is mutter even though it has chametz ingredients in it. According to Rav Moshe, dishwashing liquid doesn't need a hashgacha on Pesach, and I personally believe that that's the halacha. It doesn't need a hashgacha on Pesach. If you want to, you know, you might want to use a new bottle just because there might be little pieces of chametz stuck to the top or the side of it or whatever. But mikra din, you don't really need a hashgacha for those type of things. An interesting discussion comes up with what about toothpaste? The famous Rav story, okay, where the Rav said toothpaste is pasul achilat kelev, and one guy in the back said, you know, yelled out, but Rebbe, my dog eats, you know, toothpaste. And the Rav said, Meshuggah Nahunt. Okay? And they weren't clear whether they were talking about the guy's dog or the guy that yelled out in the Now that's a story. So you do a story. Even though there's a story, I don't know if you could learn halacha from the story, because nowadays toothpaste is much, much yummier than it was in 1950 when that story happened. Okay? There are many of us that grew up, you know, having strawberry or bubblegum flavored toothpaste, and I had kids that used to suck on the tube. Okay? It's very hard to put forth an argument that it's Nifsal Mishad Kelev, you know, when these companies are selling it to little kids because it tastes yummy, because it's strawberry flavor, something like that. It's hard to say it's Nifsal Mishad Kelev. Even the regular mint toothpaste, I wouldn't go so far. I asked Rav Lichtenstein, and he also agreed. He said, like, when that story of the Rav, that's when the toothpaste was, like, really bad tasting. Nowadays, he doesn't think it's Nifsal Mishad Kelev, and a person, therefore, should know that his toothpaste doesn't have any chametzik alcohol. Now, a little thing about alcohol: it could be fermented and distilled from many different sources. It doesn't have to be from wheat. As an example, wine, right, is alcohol that comes from grapes. And in America, the vast majority of alcohol comes from corn syrup or corn sugar, not from wheat. Vast majority. Last I checked, in cosmetics, 90% of the alcohol that's used is not chametz, only 10%. Pardon me?
Corn syrup is still the kidney.
Correct. We'll get the kidney separate. It's a separate issue. But kids, you don't have to worry about getting hanok from kidney. In any case, a lot of toothpaste have alcohol in them, but most of that alcohol is not chametzik alcohol. You should use a brand new tube before Pesach, and you have to check your brand to make sure, against lists or whatever, the OU, the Huff K, or Blumenkranz, or whatever different lists you have, to make sure that's kosher. The Rami Levy, if he didn't already start selling Colgate red box toothpaste, has a hashgacha of Manchester being kosher l'Pesach. Okay, I know, because my sister-in-law, who lives in London, always asks us to send them from Israel to London, because they, whatever, for many years they didn't sell them in London, they just sold them in Israel. I don't know. In any case, so you should be careful about toothpaste. Just a moment. Yes?
Rubbing alcohol that's designated as rubbing alcohol for use in medical purposes, does that mean you have to get rid of all your rubbing alcohol?
If it's ethyl alcohol, you don't think
it's made out of corn.
You know it is?
No, but I'm saying, let's ethyl, pretend it's not.
It's made out of wheat?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to get rid of it.
And so you would have to find
it. You have to get rid of it. Either throw it out or sell it.
Or burn it.
That's an issue where I just explained. That's what I explained to Moshe Feinstein.
Rubbing
alcohol is denatured.
Denatured? I thought it's that poisonous,
it's denatured. It's icky. It's icky, but there's an issue of Efshel Hafer. That's how much of Feinstein passes.
Even if it's designated for potential Pikuach Nefesh purposes.
What? Nefesh? If it's Pikuach Nefesh, you don't call it to a cooler, but you
no,
can
but
go
out. It
doesn't make a difference. You make sure that the alcohol that's in that rubbing alcohol does not come from wheat, that's all. Chances are it doesn't, but you could look up on lists and find out what does and what doesn't. Yeah.
If toothpaste nowadays isn't Nifsal Mishad Kelev, where does it fall? Is it
meaning it still has a din of it has a din of ochel?
It would be ochel.
Toothpaste has a din of ochel.
When
it has to be kosher l'Pesach.
Would it be like tuna though, or would it be like regular
tuna flavored toothpaste?
No, would it be like did tuna fish, or would you consider it like fungus?
No. So what I'm saying is that your toothpaste, you should either buy one with a hashkacha if you can.
If you
look on a list and you'll find.
No, I'm saying even if you're not going to use it, what do you have to do with it?
Oh, you put it away.
You can just put it away. You
just
don't
put
need
it
to
away.
Sell it to someone.
You
just
throw
it away.
You can put it away. Yes. No.
If you have
something that started off as chametz that was fit for human beings, the only way it becomes mutter is if it becomes any animal. It has to be you're not related to any animal.
So
if it wasn't chametz, ever, for the moment it was produced and became chametz, it was already not right for human consumption, okay, then it wouldn't have a din of chametz. But you have to know the processing, it's complicated. Basically, all fish food, dog food, horse food, whatever you have for your pet, you have to make sure that it's kosher based on. Yes?
Stuff like this, because it depends on if it tastes good, then it has to have a thing, or and if it tastes like bad stuff, then it doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, and also aftershave, that's okay then?
Aftershave, you have to make sure that the alcohol doesn't come from wheat.
But for us, we're not going to like start drinking the alcohol.
Doesn't make a difference. The question is, objectively, is that called Nifsal Michal Kelv or not? I'm telling you, Moshe Feinstein, that's how he passed it.
He said he was unsure.
No. Because he said he witnessed human beings consuming it, he passed the halacha to be machmir when it has the viscosity of water. Now, are there poskim that are more makel than Rav Moshe Feinstein? Yes, there are. Are there poskim that are more machmir than him? Yes, there are. There are many, many poskim that hold that dishwashing soap has to have hashkacha on it, which is more machmir than Rav Moshe. And there are many poskim that hold that if it has, if you have soap and you poured alcohol that was roi lachila into the soap, so it had a din of chametz and it never lost its din of chametz because the alcohol per se itself didn't turn into
which is the fact that it's okay.
I'm telling you that I think you could follow Moshe Feinstein when he's machmir to be machmir, when he's mekel to be mekel. Like on dishwashing soap you could be mekel, but on perfume and aftershave and all these things that have the viscosity of water, you should get rid of it, give it someone to sell. We'll talk about the sale of chametz some other time. Yeah.
Does the fact that toothpaste says like you're not supposed to swallow it, and if you do, you like, contact poison control?
No, they're just trying to cover themselves legally.
All right.
The Gemara in Pesachim. Okay, another halacha that you should know is the halacha of Achshavei. The Gemara in Pesachim, that Chof Aleph and Bet, says the following: Rava Omar Nifsal Me'achila Kelev Mutar Bahana. That's what Rava said. If something's Nifsal Me'achila Kelev, it's no longer Roy Lachila Kelev, it's Mutar Bahana. That's what Rava said. So the Rishonim make a deal, okay, like the Rosh makes a deal. Why did Rava say Mutar Bahana? Rava said it should have said Mutar Ba'achila. And the fact that Rava said Mutar Bahana and not Bachila just means that if it's Nifso, something is Nifso Mechila Kelev, okay, it's only Mutter to get Hana from it, but you can't eat it. Now, why would you want to eat it? As an example, let's say it's really, really icky tasting vitamins. Really icky tasting vitamins that even a dog wouldn't eat. But you're going to go ahead and pop it into your mouth and swallow it and ingest it. So the Rosh says the reason why Rava said that you can get Hana from it is just because you can get Hana, I don't know what type of Hana you would get. Use it as a paperweight. Okay, you can use it as a paperweight. But if you're going to pop it into your mouth, then it has a din of Achshavei. In other words, you've given it importance by putting it into your mouth and eating it. And by you elevating it in importance, it now has a din of Ochel and it's Osir. That's how the Rosh learned. The Ran, on the other hand, was Cholik. The Ran said, no. Rava said mutter bahana, and it's lav dafka bahana, even ba'achila it's mutter. Okay, now the Shulchan Aruch just quotes Rava's psak word for word. He doesn't get into the whole issue. He kind of like sidesteps it, kind of like when he paskins like chayv inish lebesumi bepuraya. He just quotes the Gemara word for word, and that's what he does with Rava. He says mutter bahana. The Mishnah Berurah and the Taz want to say that the Shulchan Aruch paskin like the Rosh, that there's a din called Achshavei. Okay? Now the question is, when we get to medicines, and that's really the most practical issue, very few people are going to find a moldy piece of pizza under their bed and start to eat it on Pesach. Okay? Which would be a machlokas of Achshavei. Do you say it's osur because you started to eat it or not? But more applicable is medicines. Do medicines require a special hashkacha for a Pesach or not? Or even during the year? Because sometimes you can have medicines that come from animal sources okay, or let's say from grape juice or something like that, that requires a hashkacha, is there a din of achshavei by medicine? So, yes, if the only medicine that you can find that to save your life is also, then pikuach nefesh is doch hashkacha. What?
Just save from tzar for may have seen a limb or something.
I'm not going to get into the rules of what's pikuach nefesh and when you're allowed to be mechal Shabbos and when it's doch called Torah kulach. I'm not talking about pikuach nefesh. Okay, talking about medicines, not pikuach nefesh. Okay, or medicines that let's say you could easily find a kosher alternative. Is it mutter to use medicines that don't have hashkacha or not? So Rav Moshe Feinstein basically said that popping a pill, let's say a very icky pill into your mouth, is not considered derech achila, because you're not really eating it. All you're doing is swallowing it, and therefore Moshe Feinstein paskins that if something tastes icky, you don't have to be choshish of this din of achshavei, and it doesn't need a hashkacha on it as long as it tastes icky. Okay. The Chazon Ish, hold on a second. The Chazon Ish says even more than that. The Chazon Ish says, let's say the medicine itself is kosher. It's kosher, but the binder, the stuff that they use to stick the pill together, is icky and not kosher. So he says that's also not considered a din of achshavei. That's popping into your mouth and swallowing it is an achshavei. But if you're talking about, let's say, chewable vitamins, and they're not icky tasting, and you chew them and you enjoy them, there's no safek that you need a hashkacha on those things. You need a hashkacha. Okay? You can't, get something like syrup or something like, something that's sweetened, something that, like vitamins, if it doesn't have hashkacha, you have to know that it's kosher. Okay? It's the same thing in Pesach and the same thing all year round. Any medicine that has a bad flavor doesn't need a hashkacha and could be consumed as is. Any medicine that has some kind of flavor to it, mint flavor or some sugar added or whatever it is, needs a hashkacha both on Pesach and before Pesach. Yes, Ezra.
What about pills that you don't necessarily taste? Just put in your
mouth. Water, but
like an aspirin? Like a Tylenol?
Yeah.
They're icky. I've tried chewing them. They're icky.
Oh, you're saying if you try and chew it?
Yeah.
I test these things out. I'll give you an example. Once I bought for one of the members of my family vitamin E pills. Omega-3 pills. Omega-3 pills is made out of fish oil. Okay? So I went to the chemist in Efrat, who's a Dati Jew, and I say, does this have a hashkacha on it? Because I want to make sure that it comes from kosher fish. So he says, oh, it's not royal chilakel. I said, it is royal. He says, come on, I know, I've been selling this for whatever, 20 years, it's not royal chilakel. Okay? So I took one of these pills, and I took a pin, and it looks like it's a clear thing. You prick it, and the oil's inside, this like plastic coating, whatever. I pricked it. I put it out my front door. Within 25 seconds, two cats came running and started to fight over this pill. Okay? And they swallowed it. No. In other words, it's regular fish oil, and this chemist was passing for people that it's not royal chilakel. No, this is royal chilakel. So it's another example. This omega-3 oil has to be from kosher fish, and you have to know that it's kosher. So you want to test these things out a little bit and chew them to see whether they're icky before Pesach or not. Yes, Tommy. I think that semi-sweet coating, you should know whether it's kosher or not, but generally speaking, I don't think that it's an issue. There is an issue of confectioner's glaze. Does anybody know what confectioner's glaze is?
Yeah.
Most things that are shiny, like these ibuprofen pills that are shiny, M&Ms that are shiny, jelly bellies, jelly bellies, jelly beans that are shiny, have some kind of glaze on them. And that glaze is actually, in most cases, not all cases, in M&M's I know it's not true, but in most cases, That glaze is called confectioner's glaze, and like 80% of confectioner's glaze is actually lacquer. Anybody hear of lacquer?
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you hear of people? I did. I spoke about it.
Yeah.
Do you see women like put lacquer on their fingernails? Well, like put lacquer on wood, like painting on wood. So this is lacquer. They put they coat Jelly Bellies. It's coated with lacquer, and the lacquer, the word lacquer actually comes from the lac beetle. Because the lac beetle secretes stuff on trees. Okay, you know what secrete means? Okay, and then you have these far eastern people collect it into huge sacks, and they melt it down, and basically. That's what this, when you're eating with these jelly bellies, you're actually eating something that was once in the belly of the lac beetle and was later secreted and gathered and used as lacquer. And that's what it is. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein paskins that it's meikar din, it's kosher, because it's not considered food, whatever. The OU gives a hashgach on jelly bellies, even though they come from the lac beetle. And the coating, I think, therefore, it would also fall into the similar type of thing. I don't think you have to worry that much about it. Yes?
Interesting question. Let's say something...
How do you know?
Well, it'll definitely... okay, whatever. Let's say like vitamins, which are...
What?
Tasty.
What?
Let's say something like vitamins, which are tasty, and they definitely need a hashgacha. And in the context of Pesach, let's say, where Eser Hana'a versus Eser Achila, in general context, would it be mutter to use them as a laxative? No,
I'm not actually.
Suppository.
What?
No. I just figured out your angle. I figured it out. No.
Interesting.
The answer is no. Because let's say you have your Flintstone chewable vitamins, okay? They're ochel right now. You don't need achshavei. They're ochel. And therefore, you have if they're not kosher, you can't eat them. And on Pesach, if they're chametz, you have to get rid of them before chametz, before Pesach.
But that's not on Pesach.
Huh?
That's not on Pesach. You have to deem that they're not kosher.
Theoretically, yes. I imagine.
Like I've heard people take caffeine suppositories on Yom Kippur.
So it's been on your mind. I would imagine you wouldn't need a hashgacha. You would not need a hashgacha for that. Yeah.
If Rava and the Shulchan Aruch Paskin, the Rava Achila Skela, is Asur Ba'achila, how can we use dishwashing liquid that's going to be on our dishes that we're potentially going to eat a bit of it? That's Rava Achila Skela without a Hashgacha Pesach.
Of course, it's not Rava Achila Skela. What do you mean? It's not Rava Achila Skela.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's not Rava Achila Skela. It's Mutar B'Hanah, but still Asur Ba'achila. And it's going on our dishes.
No. It would be Asur Ba'achila if it would be Achshavei. Now, dishwashing liquid, if there's some residue of soap left on the dishes, that's not a din of achshavei.
What's the actual definition of achshavei?
Achshavei comes from the word chashuv. The fact that you've popped it into your mouth to eat, you've elevated its chashivut into becoming food, even if normally it wouldn't have been food. That's a din of achshavei. That's why the Chazon Ish says that, like a coating on a pill, or the binder of the pill, that bechlal you're not interested, you don't really care that much about mitzvah the food, and that there's no din of achshavei. And therefore, I don't think you don't need a hashkocha on dishwashing with it. All right. Chomet sh'alav ava Pesach. Let's say you come back to your dorm and you reach the back of your closet, and lo and behold, you find a granola bar or you find a jar of Marmite, okay, that you had hidden away for a rainy day. Okay, what's the halacha with that? Without chametz, so the halacha, the rabbanim made a gezeira. The chametz of a pesach is also bahanah. Basically, you have to throw it out. You can't even give it to a goy. You have to throw it out. You can't get any hanah from it whatsoever. The only time that actually goes into effect is only for a type of thing that you'd be over on the isur bal yirah by yimatzeh. When are you over on the isur bal yirah by yimatzeh? If you have a kazayit. If you don't have a kazayit, you're not over in Bayra by a matzah on a deraita level.
But it's zero. If you have two half zayis, if you have a bunch of
little granola bars, right, then yeah. You would have tziruf and you would be over on Bayra or Bayra Matze, and you'd have to also throw out the stick.
Even though you're not, none yes. of them are over tight.
Correct, so. Correct. Whiskey is chametz gamur, and beer is also considered chametz gamur, and you have to get rid of it. Which gets us to the din of the sale of chametz. Let me give you a little bit of background. Those of you who are going to be going to Warsaw, you're probably going to see the kever of the Bach. The Bayit Chodosh wrote a pirush on the tour. He was a very, very colorful character, but one of the most famous psukim that he had was that he perfected the modern day sale of chametz. Until he came along, most poskim were machmir that if you're going to sell chametz to a guy before Pesach, let's say you were a whiskey merchant and you had 100 barrels of beer, 100 barrels of whiskey, let's say, and there was no way you're going to get rid of it before Pesach, and you would be completely ruined financially if you had to pour out all that whiskey before Pesach. So what would you do? You would load up these 100 barrels of whiskey onto 10 big carts, okay, drive them to Ivan up the road, and then you would make some kind of a sale where Ivan would then actually own that whiskey, and then afterwards, at a certain loss, after Pesach, you'd go back to Ivan and buy the whiskey back at a loss, and that's how you would be able to sell your chametz on Pesach. What the Bach did was, because so many Jews got into the business of innkeeping and selling whiskey, etc., he developed a mechirat chametz that you didn't have to actually move the chametz off your premise. And what you would do is you'd sell the premise, the area that the chametz is in itself. You would lock it. You would give the guy a key. Okay, and he would now own not only the whiskey, but also the shed that the whiskey was in. And it's clear from the Bach, and it's clear from the poskim beforehand, that this heter was developed because it became a big business, and it would mean economic ruin for many, many Jews if they wouldn't have had some other, you know, some type of a solution. Now, for some of you whose fathers might have a whiskey collection that, you know, goes into thousands of dollars of whiskey, so I'm not poskiming for them. And maybe they consider themselves like the Jews of the Bach, so to speak, where they would feel ruined if they had to like throw out all their whiskey Erev Pesach. And maybe the heter of the Bach applies to them, and clearly, I think 90% of local rabbis do that sale for whiskey. Here in Alon Shvut, the local rabbi doesn't. In other words, he tells people very, very clearly that the Bach's heter, or the heter Mechirat Chametz, as done with the guy beforehand, is not really meant for Chametz Gomor. And it's not meant for a person who is not going to be economically ruined, you know, unless he does it. It's a very iffy and a very, very tricky sale, and there are a lot of questions raised by the wholesale itself. One of them is that the Jew that's selling his chametz doesn't really believe he's selling it, and if the guy would come knocking on his door on Chol HaMoed to collect his Glenlivet, okay, the Jew would not give it up, right? He just wouldn't give it up because he doesn't really believe he sold it. And the guy wouldn't be coming knocking on the door because the guy doesn't really believe that he bought it. And you're not talking about like the Bach was talking about, where you give him a key and he has complete access at any time to the chametz. It's in your house and you're not interested in having Christopher or Johnny or anybody come knocking at your door. Sorry about that. You'd be interested in having Christopher or Mark come knocking at your door in the middle of Pesach and asking for his chametz. In other words, I think the biggest problem is that no one really believes it's real. Okay, there are many other halachic problems. Maybe Rav Schreiber is going to give a shiur on it. I think Erev Chisson before Pesach sometimes he talks about it. Let's put that aside. Okay, what your father does is your father's business, and what is shikulim, because he doesn't want to lose out hundreds or thousands of dollars, is his cheshbon, 100%. But you, in the dorms, okay, I hope you don't have thousands of dollars worth of whiskey that you've been saving up. Okay, I'm hoping that you don't even have hundreds of dollars worth of whiskey. I'm hoping that any chametz that you own would be worth less than $100. including all the packets of granola and all the packets of oatmeal and whatever else you might have in your room. What I'm trying to say is the proper thing to do is get rid of all your chametz and not be involved in any sale at all. The only thing I could see legitimate for you to sell are things like aftershave or cologne or toothpaste if you're not sure, you know, whether it has a proper hashkacha or not. Those type of things I could see a sale. It's very difficult for you on a practical level to actually sell your chametz here. Number one, because you don't really have true access to your rooms. Haraya, you're all being thrown out on Shabbat HaGadol from your rooms, so you don't really have an ownership of the room where you could rent or sell the space to the guy. Number two, some of you are going to Chutz Laretz, where Pesach comes in or goes out earlier than it goes out in Israel, and you get into halachic problems about owning chametz if you made a sale in Israel. And if you made the sale in Chutz Laretz, the sale would be even a bigger joke, because, you know, Christopher in New York or London buying, you know, some land and chametz in Alon Shvut is a complete joke. So what the proper thing to do is to turn to your favorite or your favorite neighborhood Kolelnik and give him this toothpaste or cologne as a matana gemura, so that when he sells his wife's perfume or whatever else, you know, it'll be sold along with it. Yes, Josh.
But the option would still be in effect for those who own like wholesale food industry that like wholesale food storehouses and like Schweppes, those places.
Schweppes? Maybe not Schweppes, maybe Coca-Cola. What do you mean? Yeah, no, look, again, I'm just telling you, if you looked into the Bach and you looked into the whole machloket, you could see that the Gedolim that developed it did not develop it for a loss of a couple hundred dollars. You know, people should run their kitchens. When you guys become balabatim, you should run your kitchens in a way that you don't have any chametz in the house. I'm not telling you go home and tell your parents, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. If the rabbi told them it's okay to do, then it's okay to do. But for yourselves and your own cheshbon, you really shouldn't do it. You know, they're playing with an issur d'oraita vayra by a matzeh. You shouldn't have it. Yeah.
What about chametz dishes? Is there any reason to it?
No, chas v'shalom. Some people make the mistake of selling chametz dishes, or even chulin pots that they're not very good at cleaning. Okay, George Foreman things that have like grease from Shana Dalit or whatever, you know, for many, many years. You try to clean it as best you can, and the rest you just mavato. You don't sell any kalim at all. If you sell kalim, you'd have to be told with them after you bought them back from the guy. Yeah.
I thought you had mentioned that things such as toothpaste and shampoo were bato b'shushim. You just put it away. You don't have to sell them.
Okay, so drop toothpaste off the list. Okay. Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, are there people who like to try and like figure out what exactly the Bach meant? Like, could it have been a great loss in general, or is it Davka of loss of Parnassa?
What I'm saying is that the Bach, any of these sales, you're going out on a halachic limb, and you're going out on a halachic limb because it's Shas HaKach. It was meant for Shas HaKach. It wasn't meant so that your mother could have like two bakes of spaghetti ready for Moshe Pesach. That's not what it was meant for.
The original one, was it Davka loss in Parnassa, or is it also just like a great loss in general?
Like, I mean, does the person have to be wiped out and his children starve to death?
Like, he can survive.
No. No, I think the great loss. I think it was meant for. I think it was meant for a great loss in general.
So if you have like the best collection of any sort of comics, then
what's immense? What's immense?
Like thousands of dollars. Wouldn't that
yes,
be a great
so
loss?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it would be a great loss. Yeah. Yeah, but my advice to you is that when you become a balabayit, either don't drink whiskey or drink so much whiskey that you won't have any left before Pesach. That's all. Yes.
If people own a house in England or flat in Israel, do they have to make separate sales for each one?
Yeah, for sure. Anywhere there's chametz, they have to sell. They have chametz to sell.
And can I be yotzer with my dad? Can I tell my dad to have it in mind that everything in my vineyard?
No. In other words, the way the Bach's heter, the way the modern mechirat chametz works with the rabbi, the chametz has to be in a specific place in the house, where it's specified. and that place is actually sold to the chamei, to the goy. So you can't put it in your dorm and have your father's machira. It won't help.
Won't help.
And you don't own the dorm. And there's a time problem. I just mentioned these things. Listen to the recording again. You still don't own the dorm. Yeah.
The Sharon by coming to the queen of, if your wife is going to be really good, not acceptable.
Marry a wife like my wife that goes along with all your mishagasim. That's my advice to you. Don't worry about shalom bias. In other words, marry someone that you'll have shalom bias with. If b'di'evet there's an issue, so you ask her your posek what to do, and I'll tell you what to do. Any other questions? Yes. Now I want to make it clear to you. I am not telling a single person in this room. I'm not telling you make problems for your father or your mother. No, that's not your business. It's not your chametz. It's not your business. Don't make problems for them. Don't tell them what to do. I'm telling for yourselves in the dorms and in the future. It's a very iffy. It's you know. You heard the story about this guy was smoking and someone said, listen, you know, probably also midiraisa to smoke. You know, it says, you know, shmatan olam afshe sechem. It's also to smoke. Okay, so he went to a reform rabbi and said, is it true that it says shmatan olam afshe sechem and it's also to smoke? So he says, what shmatan olam afshe sechem? That's a different joke. I'm getting confused. He goes to his Orthodox rabbi and says, no problem. I'll just sell your lungs to a goy. Anyways. This whole selling thing, it's super, super fictitious. It's really, really... You can't. What are you talking about? Oh, you're saying if your mom sells the macaroni?
Yeah, if the
because I think she, I personally think that if she asks a rabbi, and if a rabbi tells her, yes, you could sell it, in my opinion, there is no knas there. In other words, knas applies to someone who goes against the halacha. And if her rabbi passing that it's good, then for her it's good. And therefore, in other words, the macaroni doesn't become usur. But there are people, many, many people, that not only from their own moms they won't eat, but let's say they won't go to buy, let's say, chametz from the makolet here because the makolet doesn't mechirat chametz, and they won't buy chametz from there because they so much don't believe in the mechirat chametz. There are such people.
That's one approach to take with your family.
No, I'm saying halachically it makes sense. That there's not a knas. If a Jew followed a psak, you can't say that he gets a knas, meaning that there's an isur because of which is chamish lavavach is a knas. If he followed the halacha properly, I think we have to stop for Marv. I'm sorry. You can ask me upstairs.
Before you put away the computer, have your notes. Yeah.